This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
More tornado destruction. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, May 29. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
At least 11 people were hurt when a tornado roared through northeast Kansas. That makes 12 straight days of at least 8 tornadoes per day.
The Supreme Court has refused to consider an Indiana law that bans abortions based on sex, race, or disability.
The World Health Organization says working too hard is now a recognized phenomenon. Here are the symptoms it describes.
And executives who lead by example when it comes to paternity leave.
Employers are, leading employers, especially big companies that want to retain people, are expanding paternity leave and parental leave policies for men at a very rapid rate.
Wall Street Journal writer Sue Schellenbarger on the bosses who walk the walk when it comes to parental leave for a newborn. She's here in about 20 minutes. An apparent tornado has struck northeast Kansas, injuring 11 people while Kansas City International Airport briefly shut down due to damage. The Kansas City Star says at least a dozen houses in the town of Linwood, adjacent to the city of Lawrence, were damaged or destroyed, some wiped from their foundations, others ripped apart by violent winds. Roger Brown considers himself lucky that his family survived.
We have a concrete safe room underneath the front porch with a steel door, and my wife and I and dog and cat were all in there, and we could hear the house being destroyed above us, but we were all safe.
There were about 13,000 customers without power in the Lawrence area late yesterday. Kansas City International Airport said passengers waiting in the airport were rushed to the parking garage tunnels for safety. It was part of a massive severe weather system in the central U.S. that produced at least 8 tornadoes a day for 12 straight days. A tornado also touched down in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, 50 miles west of Philadelphia. Authorities in Ohio, meanwhile, have confirmed at least one fatality tied to a string of tornadoes across Ohio and Indiana, part of a two-week wave of extreme weather in the central U.S. An 81-year-old man was killed and 7 other people were injured Monday night when an EF3 tornado roared through the town of Salina, Ohio, in the western part of the state near the Indiana border. As many as 90 homes were damaged.
You know, the power of a tornado is, you just can't believe it until you see it.
Ohio Governor Mike DeWine says things could have been much worse.
From the air, it just looks absolutely horrible. You see not only roofs of houses off, but you see just everything just like splintered.
The National Weather Service says an EF3 means winds reached speeds of between 136 and 165 miles an hour. The city of Dayton asked residents to conserve water as power has been lost at both water plants and pump stations. Dayton officials also issued a boil water advisory. The city set up water distribution centers at some Red Cross shelters and other locations. Changing gears now, the Supreme Court has sidestepped a couple of major abortion cases. The High Court yesterday upheld an Indiana law that requires the burial or cremation of fetal remains after an abortion, but the justices rejected an opportunity to consider Indiana's effort to ban abortions based on sex, race, or disability. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The provision barring abortions because of a fetus's sex, race, or disability, the justices went out of their way to say the court was expressing no view on the merits. Rather, it denied Indiana's attempt to revive the case because there was no conflict among appeals courts. USA Today says lurking in lower courts are more restrictive state laws banning abortions after only a few weeks, and another Indiana law requiring ultrasound tests at least 18 hours before an abortion awaits possible Supreme Court review. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. In recent months, Alabama enacted a near-total ban on abortion, with an exception that applies only when a woman faces a serious health risk. The legislature rejected exceptions for victims of rape or incest. And four southern states plus Ohio have banned abortions after 6 to 8 weeks of pregnancy or when a fetal heartbeat can be detected. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get additional savings when you call a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Additional savings valid May 6th through 30th at 8 a.m. Eastern on select computers from customer calls Dell. Excludes Dell Canvas, PowerEdge T30, and select order codes.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. The to-do list for Congress is getting longer and longer thanks to high-profile skirmishes between President Trump and congressional Democrats. With the first half of 2019 off to a slow legislative start, both chambers are facing a potential logjam of crucial deadlines and competing priorities heading into the back half of the year. More from Jordan Carney, reporter at The Hill. Jordan set this up.
We had the sort of the blow up, I guess you could call it, at the White House last week's infrastructure meeting. And the talk from lawmakers coming out of that was, how does that affect not only infrastructure, but also, you know, they were in the middle of budget talks. Those seem to have gone to the back burner now. They've got to fund the government later this year. They've got to raise the debt ceiling. There's sort of a laundry list of bills that they need to do, and they've got to do all of that amid, I guess I would say, this atmosphere where you've got congressional Democrats and Trump fighting very publicly. You need both of them to agree on all these things. It complicates it.
Yeah. Start with disaster aid.
Yeah, so the Senate sort of got its long stall disaster aid deal last week when they agreed to drop off all the immigration proposals, so it's just a straight disaster aid package. They passed it. They thought the House was going to pass it on Friday, and then they ran into a bit of a setback when you had Congressman Roy from Texas object, saying, you know, Congress should be here to vote on this, first of all, but also he objected because the immigration language wasn't in it.
Where is infrastructure at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. So you had this meeting at the White House where they, Democrats were saying they wanted to hear Trump lay out his plan for how to pay for this infrastructure package. Instead, you had the president come out and say, you know, as long as these investigations are ongoing, you know, we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. We can't both do infrastructure and have my administration investigated. I mean, at the moment, it seems like infrastructure is sort of on hold. There's a lot of talk, like there always is, on both sides of the aisle about saying, you know, we want to do this infrastructure deal. You know, we hope that we can find a way over sort of this road bump that happened at the White House. A thing that could force their hand is they've got a deadline on a five-year highway bill they passed back in 2015 that'll expire next year, so that might force some action up here, but that's also, you know, pretty close to the election. Congress has a tendency to punt on things it doesn't want to deal with. So we'll have to see if they can sort of overcome the setback that happened.
Yeah, we're speaking with Jordan Carney, Senate reporter at The Hill. Her piece is called To-Do List Piles Up for Congress. What about something like government funding?
Yeah, so they have until the 1st of October to get a government funding deal. It sort of works like dominoes. You have to get, you know, the first piece, and so they have to first get a budget cap deal. They have to agree on top-line figures for defense and non-defense spending. It really seemed like they were optimistic last week when they all met up at the Capitol with Mulvaney and Mnuchin, that they were going to, I mean, they could, McConnell thought, said, you know, I think we could get a deal by the end of the day. It sounds like when they sort of regrouped, they sort of wheels came off the wagon on those talks. Schumer mentions they're going to meet again once they return. And I think, you know, best case scenario that they're hoping for is that they get, you know, budget caps deal next month, they pass it, and that lets appropriators start writing the actual, you know, 12 individual appropriations bills. So far, the Senate hasn't done any of that. So they're kind of waiting and hoping that they get a budget caps deal pretty quickly.
And then finish up with the debt ceiling.
Yeah, so kind of all mixed into all of that is Congress needs to raise the debt ceiling heading into this fall. You know, some analysts have put it around September, which would line it up with also the government funding fight.
Wow.
So it could be a really interesting September. But Mnuchin did say that it could actually come up in late summer. He didn't specify what late summer was, so maybe August. But at some point, they've got to raise the debt ceiling, what Congress would like to be the best case scenario.
Thanks, Jordan. Jordan Carney, Senate reporter at The Hill. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, tornadoes have erupted across the country over the last 2 weeks as a volatile mix of warm, moist air from the southeast and persistent cold from the Rockies clash and stall over the Midwest. One of them swept through Lawrence, Kansas yesterday, injuring about a dozen people and briefly shutting down the Kansas City airport. Local dairy farmer Brian Hahn spoke with ABC.
We knew it was coming, and we were underneath the basement. And, I mean, you know the sounds. It sounds just like it does. It's a rumble.
On Monday, the U.S. tied its current record of 11 consecutive days with at least 8 tornadoes confirmed on each of those days. For the second time in less than a week, the House has failed to pass the Senate-approved $19 billion bill providing disaster aid funding to parts of the U.S. hit by hurricanes, flooding, earthquakes, and wildfires after a Republican lawmaker objected. Thomas Massie of Kentucky objected to a request to pass the measure by unanimous consent during a pro forma session. If the bill had passed, it would have gone straight to President Trump's desk for his signature. Most lawmakers are back home in their districts this week for a week-long Memorial Day recess. The Supreme Court has sidestepped major abortion cases, letting stand a lower court ruling that Indiana can't ban abortions for the purpose of selecting sex or race or to avoid having a disabled child. It did, however, allow the state to regulate the disposal of fetal remains. The court's opinion appears to be a compromise over the most divisive issue on the docket. Three volunteer rescuers who found a hiker more than 2 weeks after she disappeared in a Hawaii forest described their elation and relief after spotting her near a waterfall in deep vegetation. Amanda Eller had been missing for 17 days after she went for a hike on a Maui trail. The 35-year-old physical therapist and yoga instructor says she fared pretty well.
I have some wounds on my ankles. Really, that's the worst of it. My knee is a little painful. No big deal.
Eller spent 2 days in a Maui hospital with a twisted knee and severe sunburn. She says she hopes to return to work in 2 weeks.
Not making light of it, but I mean, there are worse places to get lost, right, than in a Maui rainforest or in paradise. Right? Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. More new fathers are getting a taste of the pressures that working mothers have faced for decades. These involved dads want to carry an equal load at home while keeping their careers humming. Sue Schellenberger, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, says mindful of the benefits, many employers are expanding parental leave offerings for men and encouraging them to take it. Sue wouldn't have had this conversation 30 years ago.
This is actually a much faster change than that. It's really one of the most marked shifts in workplace behaviors and policies that I've seen.
All right, so what's going on? What have you noticed?
Well, employers are, leading employers, especially big companies that want to retain people, are expanding paternity leave and parental leave policies for men at a very rapid rate. And they're encouraging managers and executives to take leaves and set a good example for their subordinates. So we're seeing really quite a rapid expansion in the number of men who take more than a couple of days off with their new children.
And as you've pointed out before, I mean, it's one thing to have a paternity policy, a paternity leave policy. It's another thing to actually use it.
It's been on the books at many companies for years, but men have been reluctant to take it because they face a social stigma, career setbacks, just a general assumption that they aren't really serious about their careers. The shift here is that more employers are really trying to disabuse them of that idea and encourage them to take it because it has so many benefits for retention and for the person's family and work-life balance.
All right, so you reference in the early part of your story a company called Olark, which does live chat software, and they had their two biggest executives take, 3 weeks each for paternity leave, right?
3 months. They did. The CEO and the COO of this live chat software provider both took paternity leaves at the same time for 3 months, and they were. It was difficult for them to detach from work, but they set their people up, gave them a long leash, and actually did it. And the people at the company told me that this really was empowering for the employees. They felt like if the bosses could do it, then certainly the subordinates could do it as well. So it was both a symbolic act and a felt need by these two men.
Wow. So this was the CEO and the COO. Did they, at some point, just sort of make themselves available for a call now and then? Or is it
complete? They did. The COO in particular had office time on Mondays. Otherwise, they tried not to check in on Slack, the instant messaging system. They tried to keep their distance, and they prepared their frontline managers to react and deal with whatever came up. And the managers learned to do that. In talking with them, they all said that they was scary at times, that they really faced some issues such as when a key employee quit, but they also gained confidence and learned better teamwork in the process. So it was an exercise in delegation for these two executives who are also the co-founders of the company.
Thanks, Sue. Sue Schellenberger, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Her column is called Work and Family. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for spending time with us, and welcome into Wednesday, May 29. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: tornadoes strike northeast Kansas and southeastern Pennsylvania. That's 500 tornadoes reported in the last 30 days. National Weather Service says flooding in at least 8 states along the Mississippi River is the longest lasting since 1927. Supreme Court won't reinstate Indiana's ban on abortion for sex selection. National Spelling Bee underway in Maryland. New fashion line from Rihanna available today. And the workers who custom built a walker for a 2-year-old boy. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Dell is thanking small businesses this month with up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. Last year, an army of paid workers with stacks of voter registration forms fanned out in Memphis, Nashville, and other parts of Tennessee to persuade African Americans to vote. By October, the Tennessee Black Voter Project took credit for turning in more than 90,000 voter registration applications. But officials in the state's two largest counties say the surge of forms in the weeks before Election Day was chaotic and consuming. They said thousands of applications had errors or omissions, and their workers were overwhelmed by the task of verifying all the forms. And so controversial restrictions were made. More from Amy Gardner, national political reporter at The Washington Post. Amy, what's going on?
Election administrators complained, and folks at the Tennessee Secretary of State's office, which administers elections in Tennessee, decided that legislation was needed to prevent this from happening. And you saw this legislation go through the Tennessee legislature that basically put pretty deep restrictions on voter registration drives, specifically targeting those that paid their workers. Paid canvassers would be subject to civil penalties if they submitted registrations with errors on them. So when I started looking into this when that legislation passed, what I found and what surprised me was that the folks who had proposed the legislation in the Secretary of State's office and in the legislature, which is controlled by a Republican supermajority, had not actually done a full accounting of how many mistakes there were. Certainly there was this enormous high new volume of registration applications from this voter drive, which took credit for 91,000 registrations.
Wow.
But we didn't know how many of the ones that they put in had mistakes, how many of those mistakes were simple, honest mistakes, how many of those mistakes looked more like possible fraud. And it turned out that they didn't know either. They hadn't actually done an accounting before proposing and then passing this really strict new law that makes it much more difficult for registration drives to operate without getting running the risk of these civil penalties.
Got it. And why did the restrictions target paid canvassers?
It's a really good question. The lawmakers say that targeting paid canvassers would exempt quote-unquote well-intentioned registration drives from the new restrictions. They used some language that the voter registration proponents said was loaded, like they weren't trying to go after honest, well-intentioned groups. They wanted to go after this one group that they believed was not honest and was not well-intentioned, and that they believed was intentionally trying to submit fraudulent registrations. And so some of that language that they used conjured up images for some of the voting rights activists of sort of Jim Crow racism, like poll taxes and literacy tests. Like, we want honest, well-intentioned people to vote, but not those people over there, was sort of the insinuation that some people heard in that rhetoric. And then furthermore, these lawmakers never really documented what they meant by the volume of problems and the volume of fraud. We really don't know how big the problem was.
We're speaking with Amy Gardner, national political reporter covering voting issues at the Washington Post, and she's written a story entitled How a Large-Scale Effort to Register Black Voters Led to a Crackdown in Tennessee. So has it become a racist slash political issue now?
Well, certainly the legislation has been divisive, with those who supported the legislation saying it was necessary to preserve the integrity of elections in Tennessee, and those who opposed it saying that the legislation was actually not about integrity, but was about making it more difficult to register black voters. So certainly some of those activists and those registration groups playing in this space accused these Republican lawmakers of racist intent and voter suppression intent.
So ultimately, did they wind up cleaning up all those 91,000 that were submitted and get the needed answers or clarifications?
They didn't. They tried, but a lot of them, they were not able to reach the voter. And so ultimately, one of their arguments for the legislation was that this was unfair to voters, because there were voters out there who had filled out a form incompletely without somebody helping them do a better job of filling out the form, and therefore that voter might have shown up at the polls in November unable to vote, which seems like a pretty valid point. But we don't know how many of those there are.
Thanks, Amy. Amy Gardner, national political reporter at the Washington Post. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 19 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you know that old saying in marketing, when something doesn't really succeed the first time, try again. At least that seems to be the adage that IHOP is subscribing to these days. You'll remember that the chain last year, made famous by its pancakes, changed its name to IHOB in an effort to promote a new line of burgers. The change, albeit temporary, didn't seem to go over as swimmingly as they would have liked, sparking a social media backlash. Looking to jump back into the fire, the IHOP Twitter account teased another possible name change coming this Monday, complete with a video featuring some of the biggest complaints people had about last year's promotion. What could the P be? Find out June 3rd, said the tweet. This, of course, set off speculation about what change might be on the way, with pretzels and pizza, two of the more popular and obvious choices. Others, meanwhile, sarcastically joked that maybe, just maybe, IHOP would finally start making pancakes.
Ah. You know, this doesn't cover a subject that you and I have discussed before.
Oh.
Right?
I know where you're going with this.
Pickles.
Pickles.
Is it possible that IHOP is going to introduce the pickle sandwich, something you and I have long supported on this program?
Yes. I mean, there was a lot of that going around with the, you know, between us and the rest of the world complaining that they wanted the McPickle to be introduced, like we were teased on April Fool's Day by McDonald's. Yes, perhaps they're jumping on that bandwagon. I mean, I like that.
You say others, but we have led the charge since then. We may not have been first, but we have led the charge since then.
Trying to share the credit as much as possible. Trying to be humble here,
this
but
would
yes.
be great. Everybody does pizza or pretzels, but that's easy stuff. Tackle pickles, IHOP.
I did not see anybody mention pickles. We are going to have to get this going. And you know how things go in the bizarre news business, Gordon. Sometimes hashtag Florida man is the one making the news, and sometimes he's the victim. The latter is the case this morning, as a man received an unusual surprise in his bathroom when a ball python slithered out of his toilet and bit him on the hand. The Coral Springs Police Department said firefighters responded to an apartment building Sunday after the man found the snake in his toilet at about 4 a.m. The man, who said he did not know if the snake was attempting to use the toilet to enter or exit his apartment, received a bite to the hand from the non-venomous snake, but thankfully was not seriously injured. The ball python was taken to a reptile center.
Man.
I mean, there are just so many bad things about this. 4 a.m., you know, stumbled to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Hopefully didn't sit down. You know what I'm saying? I mean, hopefully was as far away from it as possible. By the way, did you see a picture of this snake?
No.
This was no small snake.
Really?
This was a large python.
It's probably best I don't see that snake. By the way, I would probably never go to the bathroom again.
Right.
That would just end it. I would be like, no, I'll just burst or whatever happens when you don't go.
And your next call to a real estate agent.
Yes.
Putting that house on the market.
New home, please. One without toilets. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get additional savings when you call a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Additional savings valid May 6th through 30th at 8 a.m. Eastern on select computers from customer calls Dell. Excludes Dell Canvas, PowerEdge T30, and select order codes.
Thanks for joining us. Another reason to be careful about managing stress at work. Working too hard is now a recognized occupational phenomenon. The World Health Organization now includes, quote, burnout in its International Classification of Diseases handbook. The agency described burnout as a syndrome resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. According to the WHO, doctors can issue a diagnosis of burnout if a patient exhibits three symptoms: feeling depleted of energy or exhausted, feeling mentally distanced from or cynical about one's job, and problems getting one's job done successfully. The agency said it plans to develop evidence-based guidelines on mental well-being in the workplace. BuzzFeed says burnout as a psychological term was first described in the mid-1970s when a psychologist used it to describe cases of physical or mental collapse caused by overwork or stress. He ascribed the condition to helping professions such as nurses and doctors. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a vicious storm tore through the Kansas City area yesterday evening, spawning tornadoes that downed trees and power lines, damaged homes, and injured at least a dozen people. Robbie Giffen is a pastor in Lawrence.
We made our way out here because we had offered our building up for a shelter, and we're happy to do it. Get out here, and we have no power. And so obviously they had to scurry a little bit to find a place that did have some power here in town.
Parts of Pennsylvania and New Jersey were also under tornado warnings hours after a swarm of tightly packed twisters swept through Indiana and Ohio overnight, smashing homes and ending the school year early for some students because of damage to buildings. One person was killed and at least 130 were injured. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says if a Supreme Court vacancy occurs during next year's presidential election, he would work to confirm a nominee appointed by President Trump. Speaking at a luncheon yesterday in Kentucky, McConnell was asked what his position would be on filling a spot should a justice die next year.
How we fill it?
Now, that would be a sharp contrast to his decision to block President Obama's nominee to the high court following the death of Justice Antonin Scalia in February 2016. At that time, he cited the right of the voters in the presidential election to decide whether a Democrat or a Republican would fill that opening, a move that infuriated Democrats. Federal disclosure forms show that Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao has retained shares in a construction materials company more than a year after the date she promised to relinquish them. Shares of the stone, sand, and gravel company, Vulcan Materials Company, have risen nearly 13% since April 2018, the month in which Chao said she would be cashed out of the stock. Broadway is booming. A theater set a new annual box office record of $1.83 billion in its 2018-19 season, up 10.3% from the prior year. While new shows contributed to the bottom line, long-running hits including Hamilton, The Lion King, and Aladdin brought in the biggest dollars.
Man, up 10-plus percent?
Yep.
That's big stuff. That's the economy, I guess.
No, I'm sure it is.
Go to the theater when the economy is good. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Heartwarming story out of Northwest Georgia. Fox News says 2-year-old Logan Moore needed help to walk, and thanks to Home Depot employees in Cedartown, he can now do so on his own. Logan has hypotonia, a condition in which a person has low muscle tone, resulting in reduced muscle strength. It also affects motor skills like walking. According to Fox 26 there, Logan's parents were worried their insurance wouldn't cover their son's walker. But when they went to their local Home Depot last week to get the parts to build Logan's walker themselves, they got a gift from the staff instead. Store employee Jeffrey Anderson described on Facebook how he and his colleagues built the walker for the Moore family out of PVC pipe while telling Logan and his parents to, quote, go and enjoy ice cream and come back in an hour. Mr. Anderson said when the family returned, everyone was crying to see Logan walk around with the biggest smile on his face. Oh, and they also did this for free. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.